The brothers visited several farmers that afternoon, and one other sheepman, tending his flocks with his brothers. They didn't encounter one hostile eye the entire day. They didn't miss the sensation, knowing they would encounter plenty of hostility as soon as they rode back into town. Their horses were tired, so they walked them, letting the animals pick their own pace on the road back to Dale, Colorado.
I think Millie has her eyes on you, brother.
And Victoria flusters up and gets orders mixed when you're around.
And about 100 people are trying to kill us. At least it seems that way.
It can only get worse. Sam, you smell the dust?
Yes. I thought it was my imagination. Around the bend, by those rocks up ahead, would be a dandy place for an ambush.
You read my mind. How do you want to play it?
We'll have about 100 yards of cover when we enter those trees. Cut to the right and swing in around behind them.
The brothers cut off the road and into the thick stand of timber. They ground-reined their horses, shucked rifles out of saddle boots, and made their way through the lush silence to the timber's edge. When conversation was needed, they talked with Cheyenne hand signals. The brothers spotted 4 men in the stone outcropping, 2 low in the rocks and 2 more high up. The ambushers all held rifles. Neither of the brothers could see their horses. If they could spot their horses, it would be fun to cut them loose and make the hands hoof it back to town. That beat killing any day. The brothers worked closer to the rocks, circling now, staying in the timber that curved around the outcropping. They finally spotted the horses, but there was no way they could get to them without exposing themselves. Matt grinned and made the Cheyenne sign for dust, lifting his rifle as he said it. Sam returned the smile, and the brothers separated, finding good positions from which to lay down some fire. They were less than 100 yards from the ambushers, and from their positions, the crew of Lightning and Circle V hands were fully exposed. Matt lifted his rifle, sighted in, and pulled the trigger just as Sam fired. Matt's slug hit the rifle's receiver and tore the weapon from the man's hands. Sam's .44 slug slammed into the magazine tube and tore it loose from the barrel. The rifle clattered on the rocks. Matt's second shot lifted the hat from a man's head and sent him diving for scanty cover. Sam blew the heel off a cowboy boot. The brothers started peppering the rocks with lead, being careful not to hit anyone. The ambushers scrambled for their horses and fled from that area, heading for town. The brothers picked up all their brass, and Sam buried the shells, then smothered the earth. Back at their horses, the brothers carefully cleaned their weapons, for both had a hunch what the ambushers were going to tell the sheriff. They rode into town, and as they suspected, the sheriff was waiting for them.
This time, by God, I got the goods on you boys. Get off them horses. You're under arrest.
What's the charge?
Attempted murder.
A large crowd had gathered around. Friendly and unfriendly faces about equally divided.
That's nonsense. We've been riding around the country all day, visiting people. We had dinner at the Box H. You can ask Pete Harris and family.
That don't cut no ice. This happened about an hour ago, 2-3 miles west of town. You ambushed some Lightning and Circle V hands at them rocks.
We most certainly did not.
Matt drew his Colts so fast that Mayor Dale scurried behind Linwood. But Matt merely handed his pistols butt first to the sheriff.
Check them. They haven't been fired.
Jack sniffed the barrels of the Colts, then checked Sam's pistol.
I sure haven't.
A Lightning hand called Dixon raised his voice.
They was using rifles. Check them rifles.
The rifles were checked and found to be clean and powder-free.
The rifles ain't been fired either.
Come on, we'll take you out to the spot and show you. They must have fired 30 or 40 rounds.
Suits me.
Me too. I want to show you all that these men are damn liars.
Just get in the saddle and come on.
Half the town's citizens, including the mayor, made the trip out to the rocks. They found 2 busted rifles in the rocks, but not one bit of brass was found in the timber. Not a heel print or a sign of disturbed brush.
I told you they were lying. You satisfied now?
No, I'm not. But I can't charge you because there ain't no proof you two done anything.
Do you get the impression that we're being harassed, brother?
I sure do. I think it's time we found us a lawyer and laid this in his lap.
There are no lawyers in Dale.
But there is in the next town down the road, I bet.
Why would you want to see an attorney?
To sue the town, the mayor, the sheriff.
Wait a minute.
And we'd win, too.
How do you figure?
Because you're harassing us. You took the word of a bunch of no-count bums and placed us under arrest, even after we, two prominent Wyoming cattle ranchers, protested our innocence. You have maligned our good names, insulted our parentage, accused us of being low-down, dirty, filthy scum-of-the-earth ambushers, like that murderous pack of hyenas over there. And we're not going to take it anymore. We'll see how a court of law views these terrible grievances.
Now, wait a minute. We don't need a bunch of lawyers in on this. We apologize for doing whatever it is you think we did, don't we, Sheriff?
No, I can't believe it.
What was that? I couldn't quite hear. Was that an apology?
Yes! Yes, sorry!
And I want an apology from those snakes over there.
You'll play hell getting one.
You ain't heard the last from us, neither. You gonna be sorry you ever lied on us.
About 3 days' ride from the town, an old gunfighter was cooking his bacon and heating his coffee. He speared the strips of bacon and dumped in a cut-up potato and stirred the spuds around a bit. He added a bit of wild onion he pulled earlier and leaned back against his saddle. Charlie Starr was a contented man. He really had very little. His guns, his good horse, a saddle, and a few articles of clothing. But he'd never wanted much. He stirred the potatoes and smiled. All in all, he'd had a good life, he reckoned. Charlie filled his plate and went to eating. Not too many miles away, Lewis Longmont sat in his tent and enjoyed a fine wine with his meal, served on expensive china and eaten with silver utensils. The millionaire, adventurer, industrialist, gambler, gunfighter could have chosen to stay in Monte Carlo, or his suite in New York City, or in any one of a dozen elegant places. But Lewis enjoyed the rough-and-tumble ways of the American West. The rest of the world was becoming just too tame for his liking. His advisors had warned him that investing in sheep in the West was a risky business. That was enough to convince Lewis. The sheep were on their way. Lewis was just looking for a good spot for them. He'd heard the area around Dale was just right. The brothers stepped out to a fine day. The sky blue, the sun warming the earth, and at first glance, everything looked just dandy. Then they looked up the street and saw the hitch rails in front of the Red Dog lined with horses.
Wonderful. And I woke up in such a good humor.
The brothers stood for a moment on the dirt path in front of their rented shack, staring toward the town.
I'm hungry. If that pack of no-goods tries to keep me from breakfast, there's gonna be trouble.
He started walking toward the main street, Sam beside him. Matt had noticed that Sam had taken his second gun belt from his saddlebags and was wearing it. Both young men wore their guns loose in leather. The horses at the hitch rails were from the Lightning and Circle V ranches. There were none from the Box H. But there was one horse with a brand that neither of them recognized.
Think that's part of the Raley gang?
I doubt it, Sam. I don't think they'd be that open. From what I hear, most of those boys are wanted, but who knows? I've never seen that brand before.
The brand was a grinning death's head. Macabre, even for the Wild West.
Wait a second, Matt. Sure. You remember that cowboy who rode along with us for a few days several months back? What was that he said about that French-speaking gunfighter?
Yeah, Labar, a French-Canadian. The Mounties were looking for him. Rode a horse with a death's head brand. Supposed to be one of the top guns around. Some say he's better than Smoke Jensen.
He's supposed to be a top-money gunfighter.
Well, if he braces me before breakfast, he'll damn sure earn it.
But no one stepped out of the saloon as the brothers walked to the Mexican cafe. The place was crowded, but strangely quiet for so many people. Victoria came over, without her usual smile, to take their orders.
Good morning.
Is there a funeral today?
The town has been tense ever since those men rode in before dawn. Papa says they haven't set one foot outside the saloon.
So maybe it's payday and they're getting tanked up.
The word is, they're planning to kill the both of you today.
Don't worry, Victoria. It's been tried by better men than that pack of saddlebums over at the Red Dog. We're still here.
But the worry did not leave her eyes.
Be most careful today. Raul sent word in late last night that the Raley gang has ridden in. They're camped on Lightning Range.
That news does make one tend to be a bit more cautious. But not just us. That gang of no-goods are in here to make trouble for the sheepmen and the farmers. Have they been warned?
Si, they are frightened.
They better stay that way. And they better be willing to shoot first and ask questions later.
You know they will not. At least not many of them. They are peaceful people for the most part.
She left them, taking their orders to the kitchen. The brothers sipped their coffee and kept one eye on the door.
That's got to be him.
Matt turned. A man dressed all in black was entering the cafe. He was clean-shaven and neatly dressed. He even took off his hat once inside and hung it on a peg. His hair was dark and slicked back. His twin 45s were pearl-handled, the leather tied down. He walked directly to their table and sat down without being asked.
You are, of course, Matt Bodine and Sam Terwolves.
Is that a question or a statement?
I am Labar.
Big deal.
You're very impudent.
Nope, just hungry. What do you want, Labar?
Breakfast, some conversation, a chance to meet and get to know my enemies.
We're not your enemies.
Ah, je vous demande pardon, but you most certainly are. You stand in the way of my employers, so therefore you must either ride on or be removed forcibly.
Matt studied the gunfighter. Labar was not a young man. He guessed him to be around 40. But he was rugged-looking and appeared to be in very good physical shape.
I hope whoever hired you pays you well. Because if you brace me, I'm going to get lead in you, Labar. Count on that. Unless, of course, you're a back shooter.
When the time comes, my impudent and arrogant young foe, I will meet you face to face. You can count on that.
It always happens right when I'm about to eat. Did you ever notice that, Sam?
Do you have to do this before breakfast, brother?
Do what?
That.
Labar's butt hit the floor, blood streaming from his busted lips, and Sam reached down with both hands and literally ripped the man's gun belt from him.
I'll just keep this for a time. I wouldn't want anything to happen to the tools of your trade. I'm such a considerate fellow, aren't I?
Labar jumped to his feet and took a swing at Matt. Matt sidestepped, ducked, faked the man with the left, and then snapped a right to Labar's head. Labar took it flush to the nose. The hard-thrown punch broke the nose and backed the gunfighter up. He kicked up with his right boot. Matt grabbed the foot and twisted, sending the man crashing to the floor. Labar was very quick. He rolled away and jumped to his boots, his face dark with anger. He backed up and raised his clenched fists. The crowd had left their tables, most of them taking their plates with them, and backed up next to the walls, eating and enjoying the fight.
Come on, Labar. Let's see how good you are without your guns.
Labar flicked a left that Matt pushed out of the way, and the Canadian came boring in with a right that jarred Matt down to his boots. Matt backed up and took a vicious left on his shoulder. It hurt. It would have floored him if it had connected with his jaw. Matt shuffled out of the way and shook his head to clear away the roaring and worked his left arm to unkink the muscle. Labar pressed and got sloppy for an instant. Matt knocked the man back with a right and left that twisted Labar's head and sent blood flying. Matt hit him in the belly and whooshed the air from Labar. The Canadian backed up, sucking in great lungfuls of air. The breakfast diners were quiet now, their eyes riveted on the combatants. Sheriff Linwood and Mayor Dale had entered the cafe, along with Hugo Rayner and Blake Vernon and some of their hands. They stood along the wall and made no move to interfere. What they might do after the fight was anybody's guess, but for now, they let the two men slug it out. He flicked a left at Labar, but the man didn't take the bait. He ducked the punch and kept his balled fists in a protective position. Matt kicked at the man's knee, and Labar danced back. Matt spun, jumped, and showed the gunfighter some Indian wrestling moves. He got his legs around Labar's legs in a scissor lock and twisted, bringing them both to the floor. Matt rolled over quickly, came to his knees, and hammered at the man's face with both fists. Labar's eyes were glazing over, and he was mumbling incoherently and spraying blood with each exhalation, when Matt hauled him to his boots and turned him around. With one hand on the seat of his tailored pants and the other on the collar of his expensive shirt, Matt tossed him out the door. The paid gun hand landed on his belly in the alley, slid for a few feet, then lay there. Matt jerked Labar's hat from the peg and sailed it out to him. It was heavy, the hatband adorned with silver dollars. Sam had unloaded Labar's guns and replaced them in leather. He walked to the doorway and held them out for Matt. Matt took aim and hurled the rig out into the alley just as Labar was slowly getting to his knees. The heavy double rig caught him on the back of the noggin and knocked him flat on his face. This time, Labar did not move.
You may wash up back here, Senor Bodine, and your breakfast will be ready in a moment.
Mayor Dale, Hugo, Blake, and Hans left sullen and red-faced to the sound of everybody in the place applauding Matt's just-concluded actions with Labar. Jack Linwood was smiling. Sam stood by the door, just in case some of the hands broke from the crowd just leaving and came back in trouble-hunting. He watched as Labar was lifted out of the dirt and half-dragged, half-carried to the boardwalk, a hand following along, shaking the dirt from the gunfighter's fancy hat.
So, what's on for today?
Staying close to town. I got an itchy feeling in the middle of my back. I don't think a ride in the country is wise.
I agree. I'd like to know what's being discussed over in the Red Dog.
Killing us, probably.
How are your hands?
A little stiff. I think I'll buy some salts and soak them for a couple of hours.
At least doing that will keep you out of trouble.
A larger crowd of hands had gathered at the saloon by mid-morning, and by mid-afternoon, it appeared that every hand on the Circle V and Lightning payroll was in town, and they were getting rowdy. A small boy appeared at the door carrying a tray of food and a note from Juan. The man had wisely decided to close his cafe early and not reopen until the next day. He had gotten word that there was to be much trouble that night. Matt had soaked his hands several times during the day, and what stiffness had been in them was gone. The evening shadows were lengthening when Matt buttoned up his shirt and swung his gun belt around his hips.
I'm not a prisoner, and damned if I'll behave as one. I'm going to the plowshare for a beer.
I thought you'd never suggest it.
They checked on their horses, making sure they had plenty of water and hay, then began the short walk to the gathering place of farmers, sheepmen, and local townspeople who had no desire to rub elbows with the riders of Hugo Rayner and Blake Vernon. Both men quickly stepped into the shadows and waited, but it was only a drunken cowboy firing toward the sky. They walked on.
If it doesn't blow wide open tonight, I'll be surprised.
I don't think Rayner and Vernon will let it come to that. They're both bull-headed fools, but I'm betting they know a full-scale riot in the streets would only work against them. Look over there.
A group of townspeople had gathered, all of them armed with rifles and shotguns, and now were fanning out for the rooftops. In front of the Red Dog, a cowboy watched it and stepped back inside. A moment later, Hugo and Blake stepped out and appraised the situation. They stood for a few moments, then walked back inside the saloon. The brothers walked on through the night and stepped up on the boardwalk. A drunken cowboy lurched out of the Red Dog, spotting Matt and Sam.
Bodine! You just hold up right there!
Matt stopped, turning to face the man across the wide street.
I'm calling your hand, you damn nester lover!
Back off! Just ease up, go back to the bunkhouse and sober up.
Do you hear what I just said?
Hugo! Vernon! Get out here!
The ranchers stepped out onto the boardwalk.
I don't know which brand this puncher rides for, but I don't want to drag iron against a drunk. Now get your man out of here and sober him up.
You're yellow, Bodine.
You know better than that, cowboy. Go sober up. If you want to do this thing in the morning, I'll be right here in town.
Come on, Jody, back off. That's an order. Now do it.
Hugo lifted his eyes. A townsman was squatting on top of the plowshare, a rifle aimed directly at the rancher. Jody lurched back into the saloon.
All right, people. You've shown us how you feel tonight. You've all taken sides against us and lined up behind them damn sheepmen and nesters. We know who you are, and we won't forget it. From now on, you'll not get a dime's worth of business from any of us. By God, you'll see who supports this town.
Simmons, the owner of the general store, called from his position on the roof of his store.
That's not true, Hugo. But if you want to take your business elsewhere, that's fine with me. The nearest town is 40 miles north or 50 miles west.
If you're not against us, what the hell are you doing up there with a rifle in your hands?
To keep your damn rowdy hands from going on a rampage, if it's any of your business.
Little man, you don't talk to me like that.
Simmons shucked around into the chamber and leveled a rifle. Blake quickly stepped back into the Red Dog. Hugo leaned against a support post and looked up at the man's dim outline on the rooftop.
A lot of hard feelings is gonna come from this night's actions, Simmons. A lot of things is gonna happen that can't never be changed. You real sure you wanna do this?
What's right is right, Hugo. Those farmers and sheep people ain't causing no harm to anybody.
You lie. Them sheep is ruining the range and them damn nesters is cutting me off from my water.
That's not true, Hugo. A river runs right through your range. You don't want to share is the problem.
I bought my last supplies from you, Simmons.
Suit yourself. I'll get by.
And none of my men will trade with you either.
That's the way you want it.
Jack Linwood and Mayor Dale stood in front of the hotel.
It's coming apart. Bodine shoved some steel up their backbones.
I'm afraid you're right. And since I own half the businesses in this town, guess which side that puts me on?
The sheriff looked at him.
Suits me, Dale.
I'm a businessman, Jack. I have to know which side my bread is buttered on. I have no choice in the matter.
Jack turned to walk away.
And you better learn very quickly which side to take, Sheriff.
Jack returned to the mayor's side.
Now what the hell does that mean?
It means you start being a real sheriff and enforcing the law. Whoever breaks it.
I said it suits me.
Believe it. You've had it easy up to now, Jack. Now you have to start being a real sheriff. You treat everybody the same, Jack, and you'd better make that clear to your deputies.
Fine with me, but the Boers will never stand for that, Dale. They won't.
Then tell them to turn in their badges. It's that simple.
What happens when Hugo and Blake bust this range wide open? And you know they will.
You're the sheriff of this county, Jack. A regular judge swore you in. If you can't do the job, he can order you out and replace you with somebody who will do the job.
Linwood walked away. Mayor Dale turned and looked into the smiling face of Chrisman.
If you really mean that, stop both factions right now.
It's only delaying what is sure to happen.
It'll buy us time, Dale.
All right. Jack!
The sheriff turned around. He paced back to the mayor.
Order the men from the rooftops and order Hugo and Blake and their men out of town. Take your deputies and do it.
And if they want to make a fight of it?
You're the law, Jack.
Jack Linwood shook his head and walked slowly toward his office. Chrisman walked back to his saloon. Matt and Sam slipped into the plowshare and took a table after ordering beer. The place was nearly empty, with only a handful of men sitting at the tables. Chrisman got up and walked over to Matt and Sam and took a chair.
It's a start, at least.
It's a good start. Maybe when those men get home and start thinking about the whole town being against them, they'll wise up a little.
I'd like to think that'll happen, but I know those men. They'll brood about this for a time, then they'll start spilling blood. The good hands will leave, the troublemakers will stay, and both the Circle V and Lightning will hire gun hands, and the war will be on.
There's gotta be more to this than meets the eyes. There may be a dozen farmers and three flocks of sheep in this entire region. They're not taking up enough room or water to amount to anything. There's something we're missing here.
I don't see what else it could be. Cattlemen been fighting farmers and sheep for years all over the West.
Yeah, but Pete has the same suspicion I do. He started to say something about it a couple of times, I think, but changed his mind before he could complete his thought.
He, didn't say what he thought it might be.
No, but he was sure mulling something over in his mind, worrying at it.
Hell with all of you in this damn town. Damn every one of you.
I'll strangle this town dry. I'll turn this place into a ghost town.
Can they do that?
Strangle the town? Nah. There are a dozen smaller spreads out around. But with those, and the miners, and travelers, and farmers, there won't be much of a loss. There's talk the railroad will be through here in a year or so, or at least a feeder line. Yeah, we'll make it.
Since it appears likely that we'll never be allowed on Circle V or Lightning Range, and I know the cattle prices are down, tell me something. How do you suppose Blake and Hugo are fixed for cash money?
Oh, they're all right. Dale loans them money from time to time. But Dale would be the last person in the state to want to see this town dry up. Hell, he owns a big chunk of it. And he's always traveling somewhere to drum up more people to move in. And he sure wouldn't want to see two big ranchers fail. He'd lose money in the long run.
Oh, I wasn't thinking about Dale being up to something underhanded. I'm just trying to make some sense out of all of this.
Don't try to think, brother. You know it makes your head hurt.
Chrisman left the table with a smile on his lips. All in all, things were working out very nicely. The next morning, Matt and Sam were enjoying breakfast at the cafe when the sheriff walked in and took a seat at their table, uninvited.
There's no need for you boys to stick around now.
He ordered a full breakfast for himself and a fresh pot of coffee for them all.
How do you figure?
It's over, that's why. Blake and Hugo will stomp around for a few days and make a lot of threats, but in the end, that's all there'll be to it. They're not going to ride 50 miles for a drink or make a 3-4-day wagon trip for supplies. That'd be stupid. And neither one of them is that dumb. Sure surprised me when Mr. Dale gave in so easy last night, though.
Why do you suppose he did that?
I guess he was willing to risk losing a lot of money to keep a range war from happening. It was a chancy move on his part. Took everybody by surprise.
What'd Hugo and Blake do when you ordered them out of town?
Blustered up some. But me and my men were toting sawed-off shotguns. Nobody in their right mind wants to go up against a sawed-off up close. I'll be flat-out level with you two. I ain't got no use for either one of you. I just don't like you. I think them hands was laying in ambush for you the other day, and you turned it around on them. Cute, but chancy. Damn it. I don't know which side I'm supposed to be on. It's confusing. First I'm told one thing, then I'm told another.
Why don't you just enforce the law equally for all? And come the next election, you might win honestly. Wouldn't that be something?
Sure would. I've been a lot of things in my life. Marshal here and there. But to be elected by the people? That would be something for sure.
Their food came and the men ate in silence, Linwood finishing first. He stood up and looked down at the brothers.
Maybe you two ain't so bad after all. I don't know. I got some heavy thinking to do. See you around.
He paid for his meal and left the cafe.
You don't suppose?
Could be. A lot of good lawmen have checkered paths. Linwood just might be seeing right and wrong clearly for the first time in his life. For sure, he's torn up inside about what to do. His deputies are another matter.
Jack Linwood walked to his office and called his deputies in.
Now you listen up and you listen good. We play it straight from now on. You take orders from me and no one else. Not from Mayor Dale, not from none of the big three ranchers, not from nobody but me. We enforce the law. We don't hassle, and we don't take no crap from nobody. Is that clear?
The deputies looked at each other.
What the hell's going on, Jack? You know what we was hired to do as well as we do.
All that's changed. No more threatening protection money from the merchants. We're lawmen, and we're gonna be good ones. It's about time we done something good in our lives.
Two badges hit the desk.
Get gone, then. Clear gone out of town. I won't have you in here. You got 1 hour to get your possibles together and clear out.
And if we don't...
Jack laid a kosh upside of Buster's head, knocking the man to the office floor. Before the other two could drag iron, Jack's left hand was filled with a six-gun, and his eyes were very cold and very steady as they bored into the men.
Easy, Jack. We're gone. What about him?
Well, Keller, you can drag his ass out of here and get the hell out of town.
From the streets, Matt and Sam watched the men leave the sheriff's office, Keller dragging Buster.
They aren't wearing badges.
Let's wander over and sit on a bench outside the sheriff's office. The mayor might have something to say about this.
They walked over and sat down, waiting. Mayor Dale brushed by them with a curt nod of his head. He closed the door to the sheriff's office. But a window was open, and the brothers could hear every word that was said.
You want to tell me what's going on here, Jack?
A cleaned house. Now I'm looking for a couple new deputies.
You fool! Don't you know the town council could replace you in a heartbeat?
I wired the judge first thing this morning. The people put me in office, the people have to put me out. The town council ain't got a damn thing to say about county business.
All right, Jack. You're right and I'm wrong. I'll work with you all the way. Now, How about deputies? You have anyone in mind?
Jimmy Bryant comes to mind. He's young, but he's a good boy. And I think he'd stand if push comes to shove.
Agreed. Who else?
I don't have anyone else in mind. I'll just have to wait and see. I'm going to ride out to the Bryant spread and talk to Jimmy right now.
Why the sudden change of heart, Jack?
It come up on me sudden. Last evening, after I ordered Rayner and Blake out of town, they bulled up on me and told me I was supposed to be their man, bought and paid for. I didn't like that. Time for a change. And by God, I can do it, and I'm gonna do it.
Good man. I'm proud of you.
Matt and Sam looked at each other.
Linwood's sure to need some help when the pot boils over.
And since we're both so very civic-minded, that help is in the form of...
Matt pointed first at Sam, then at himself.
Tell you what, brother. When Buster and his buddy leave town, let's sort of trail along behind them. See where they go.
Straight to either the Circle V or the Lightning Spread.
That's my thinking.
Let's saddle up.
They rose just as the mayor exited the sheriff's office, all smiles.
Going to be great things happening in this town, boys. People all over are having a change of heart, me included. You boys are welcome to come back to the hotel anytime you like.
Jack Linwood stepped out of his office, closing the door behind him. He looked at the Blood Brothers.
I still don't have much use for you, but I won't hassle you none. But if you break the law, I'll put you in jail. And that's a promise.
Fair enough.
Jack swung into the saddle and headed out, searching for new deputies. The brothers saddled up, and as soon as the ex-deputies rode out, they waited a couple of minutes and then headed out after them. At the crossroads just outside of town, Phelps and Keller took the northern turn, heading for the Lightning Range. Matt and Sam tailed along behind them. When they rode onto Lightning Range, the brothers reined up.
Now what?
Let's go see Pete Harris and tell him the news. Maybe he'll spit out what's on his mind.
Naturally. Millie has nothing whatsoever to do with this visit.
Naturally. She's just a child.
Pete Harris served the brothers coffee on his front porch.
I don't know, boys, but it don't surprise me. Dale's gonna play on the winning side every time. I reckon he's seen the writing on the wall, as the saying goes, and stepped over the line.
Do you trust him, Pete?
Now that's an interesting question, son. I trust a rattlesnake as long as he's out of striking distance and I can see him. Dale is gonna make money, period. I ain't never known him to lose any. I keep money in his bank, but I don't borrow none from him. Of course, I don't really trust Chrisman either. Oh, he comes on like a fine fellow, and maybe he is. But there's something about him I just don't trust.
He said he came out here about the same time as Dale.
Well, that's right. But me and Hugo and Blake come out here years before they did. I don't know what happened to Blake and Hugo. They went power crazy, I reckon. Nothing would satisfy them. They had to have the finest homes, the finest horses, and the best of everything for their kids. And there ain't neither of them got a kid that's worth a damn for anything. You got any more news?
Linwood's on a streak. He fired his deputies. Or they up and quit. He's gone off to track down some honest men to help him.
I've seen it happen before. A man takes the wrong road and takes some years to find the right turn to get back on the straight and narrow. Jack's hell with a short gun, boys. Don't sell him short on that. But I always thought I'd seen a good streak in him. And those no-count deputies quit and rode off toward the Lightning Range, eh?
That's the way they were heading.
Hugo will hire him. Him and Blake brought in the Raley gang, so I heard. Robert told me. I knew a break was coming between us when they proposed doing that. I got me 15 good hands, most of them men who've been with me for years. There isn't a fast gun in the bunch, but they're dead shots, and there isn't a one who wouldn't charge the gates of hell with a bucket of water. If Hugo and Rayner want to take me on, and it might come to that, they'll find the Box H hands will give them 10 times more than they get. You boys want to stay for dinner? I ought to just put you on that payroll.
Dinner that day was a thick, hearty stew with hot, fresh-baked bread covered with butter. And there was a huge platter of donuts that Millie had baked. The brothers had a hard time keeping their eyes off them.
Do the hands eat this well?
Well, sure, except on Brandon and Roundups. We take turns cooking then, or hire a trail cook if one can be found. The grub is one of the reasons my hands don't hardly ever quit me.
Just as the brothers were swinging up into the saddle, Millie came up with a cloth sack filled with donuts.
For after supper.
We'll keep it a secret. I've known of shootings to occur when donuts are involved.
Pete stepped out on the porch.
You boys ride loose. Hugo and Blake won't let last night's slight die easy. I'll see you boys in town tomorrow. It's supply day. The way you boys eat, I figure I'd better double the order.
Robert and his mother Rebecca joined Pete on the porch.
How about them two, Dad?
I think Matt Bodine is the most handsome man I have ever seen.
Oh, Lord.
He would certainly be a fine catch for any young lady.
Now, wait a damn minute.
I can see it now. Millie getting married, a fancy church wedding and all that, and moving off to Wyoming. The house sure would be a much quieter place with her gone.
Married? Hell's fire. She just met the man a couple days ago.
Millie and Matt. That sure has a nice sound to it.
All right, that's enough. But girl, you could do a heck of a lot worse.
They were 5 miles from the Box H when both brothers began to get a tingling feeling in the middle of their backs.
Now!
Matt and Sam sent their horses scrambling off the road and into a stand of timber. The slug came so close to Sam he could feel the heat of it slamming past his ear.
Don't drop the donuts!
They rode into the timber and jumped off their horses, shucking their rifles from the boots. The brothers made their way to timber's edge and crouched down.
That slope, right over there, in that jumble of rocks.
There was no 44, or 4440. It was a Sharps or a Spencer.
I've seen people make shots at 1,000 yards with one of those. Any of those slugs could tear your head off.
Matt dug the slug out of the tree it hit and looked at it.
Springfield, 45.
Far out of range for these Winchesters.
They were not in a good position for getting out safely. The thick timber they were in covered about 5 acres. To the left of them lay a rocky flat, to the right and behind them, a vast meadow. All within easy reach of the big, single-shot Springfield rifle.
I think we're stuck.
Only a few more shots were fired from the sniper hidden in the rocks above them during the next hour. And they were chance shots, since Matt and Sam were well hidden and well protected. No one came down the road, and the brothers hoped no one would. But they suspected the shootist would not hesitate to kill anyone who wandered into his field of fire.
Who did we tell we were going out to the Box H?
No one. So he had to have been followed. When the sniper reached this place, he just holed up and waited for us to return.
An hour passed. The horseman was coming from the direction of the Box H.
Stay back!
Stay back! Sniper in the rocks!
The horseman veered quickly off the road to the north side and dismounted, grabbing his rifle from the boot. He concealed his horse and took up a position behind rocks.
Bodine and 2 wolves?
Yeah! He's had us pinned down here for hours.
Name's Cooper. Call me Coop. I ride for the Box H. I seen you boys the other day.
We got a sack full of donuts we'll share if we can get shut of that gunman up yonder.
Millie make him?
Yep.
We'll get shut of him. There's 2 more hands from the spur coming up behind me.
Where's the spur?
Little spread on the west side of the parachute. Good people.
That seemed to do it for the sniper. A moment later, he was riding off, putting the spurs to his horse. But the massive upthrusting of rock prevented anyone from getting a glimpse of him or taking a shot. The men gathered in the road and shook hands.
Well, whoever he was, it's a good thing he's gullible. You might have guessed by now that no one else is coming.
Sam went to collect the sniper's fallen bullet casings.
45 Springfield. The man's got a V-shaped cut on the sole of his right boot, and he's right-handed.
This is getting out of hand.
They've gone too far. We'll report this to Sheriff Linwood.
Are you serious?
Sam explained briefly what all had taken place in Dale.
Well, now, that's good news, but it don't make no sense. I never figured Mr. Dale would switch sides like that.
Does the man have a first name?
Now, there's an interesting question. If it does, I ain't never heard it.
Once in town, Coop went to the Red Dog, Matt and Sam to the sheriff's office. Linwood listened to their story, sent his brand new deputy Jimmy over to the saloon to talk to the Box H hand, and looked at the brass Sam had picked up.
Only people around here who have Springfields is the Reed family, farmers. But they'd have no reason to shoot you boys. Thank you for reporting this. Maybe I was hasty in my disliking you.
Louis Longmont sent one of his men into town to check on the deed to his property, filed under a corporate name, and set up his camp on his property. Charlie Starr rode slowly into town and swung down in front of the Red Dog. He beat the dust of the trail from his clothing with his hat and stepped inside. Labar was standing at the bar, his face bruised and swollen from the beating he'd received at the hands of Matt Bodine. He was in an ugly mood and ready to strike at anyone for any reason, real or imagined. Young Deputy Jimmy Bryant was having a sandwich and a beer at the table across the room. Labar made him nervous, but the kid was game, with no backup in him. He was good with a gun, although by no means in Labar's class. Sheriff Linwood was out in the rocks, trying to pick up the trail of the ambusher. But after 24 hours, he didn't give that much hope. Charlie Starr ordered a rye and a beer, then made himself a sandwich from the table and took a seat a couple of tables away from the young deputy. Starr recognized Labar. He had seen his likeness only a few days back. He wondered if Labar knew there were fresh wanted posters out on him. $1,000. He'd killed a man over in Nebraska, and a judge had ruled it murder. Starr just wanted to eat his sandwich and enjoy his drinks. He wasn't looking for trouble. Labar was another story.
Hey, you, the punky with the star on your shirt. Look at me when I talk to you, little baby boy.
Charlie drank his rye down neat, chased it with a swallow of beer, and took a bite of sandwich.
I think I'll come over there and rip that tin star off your shirt and shove it up your eyes, baby face.
Charlie sized up the situation. The kid had both hands on the table and the leather thong was over the hammer of his pistol. If the kid moved a hand, Labar would kill him.
Deputy, do you have the power to deputize citizens in time of need?
I think so, sir.
Then deputize me.
How do I do that?
Just say I'm a deputy.
Well, gee, you're a deputy of this county.
Thank you.
Charlie knew his guns were loose in leather. He looked at Labar, who was watching the older man with a puzzled look on his beat-up face.
Pretend I'm wearing that star, and come over here and rip it off my shirt, you cocksucking son of a bitch.
Labar's mouth dropped open.
What? Did you call me, you old horse turd?
I called you a cocksucking son of a bitch. What's the matter, you deaf as well as ugly?
Pete Harris was in the saloon, having a beer and a sandwich over in a darkened corner, and his foreman, Shorty, was with him. Robert was seeing to the loading of the supply wagon, and Becky and Millie were shopping. If the old, hard-bitten rider didn't intercede, Pete had made up his mind to shoot Labar down himself. The tough old bird looked familiar to Pete, but he couldn't place him. Lean-waisted, but with a lot of muscle still in his upper torso. The man's wrists were thick, and his hands big and calloused.
Do you have a wish to die, old man?
I'll die someday. That's something we all have to face. But I won't die at your hands, Labar.
Oh, you've heard of me.
How else would I have known your name? Damn if you ain't fucking stupid.
Labar looked at Jimmy.
Are you going to let this poor old ragged man do your fighting for you, little baby?
Look at me, asshole!
I think you need to be taught a lesson in manners, old man.
You don't have the time, Labar. You were pushing hard at the kid, knowing you're a slicker gun handler than him. But you ain't slicker than me. I don't usually stick my nose in other folks' affairs, but I'm making an exception. Well, here I am, Labar. Will Charlie Starr do?
Why, you old tumbleweed! I ain't seen you in 25 years.
Charlie never took his eyes off Labar.
Who you be, mister?
Pete Harris, you old gray wolf. You get done with this tin horn here, I'll buy you a drink.
Labar was shaken to his boots. He had backed himself into a corner and knew it.
Come on, Labar. Drag iron against this poor old ragged man. I don't think you've got the balls to do it.
What's your stack in this, star?
I like the kid.
Labar's hands dropped to the butts of his guns. Charlie drilled him twice, the old Colts seeming to jump into his hard hands. Labar backed up against the bar, a very peculiar expression on his face.
Damn you. I'm dead because you like the kid.
Yep.
What a stupid thing to die over.
Yep.
Matt Bodine and Sam Two-Wolf stepped inside, curious as to what all the shooting was about. Charlie looked over at Jimmy.
I didn't mean no disrespect toward you by horning in on your play, son, but you'd never have taken LeBar. He was a bad one.
I thank you for saving my life, sir.
Knock off the sir, deputy. My name's Charlie.
Yes, sir. Charlie?
LeBar was being dragged out to the boardwalk. The Swamper had been sent to fetch the Undertaker.
You quitting your job now, Charlie?
What job?
Under the laws of this brand new state and the laws of this county, you're a deputy sheriff now. I was a witness.
Chrisman and Dale had both gone inside the Red Dog, stepping back to allow LeBar's body to be dragged out. It was dumped on the boardwalk just as a group of ladies walked up.
Oh!
Goodness gracious, for heaven's sake.
Get that disgusting thing off the boardwalk this instant.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that Charlie Starr?
Sure is. And I'm going to speak to the sheriff as soon as he gets back about making Charlie a full deputy.
I'm against it.
And me too.
That's the first time those two have agreed on anything in 10 years.
LeBar's got $1,000 bounty on his head. See that I get it, will you, deputy?
I sure will, Charlie.
That ought to be enough for you to ride out on, then. Come over to the bank as soon as that reward amount is confirmed, and I'll let you have the money. Then you can ride out.
I think that's a good idea.
Matt and Sam and Pete gave one another curious glances at this strange exchange of agreements between two men who were supposed to hate each other.
Jimmy, go strip LeBar's guns from him. They're yours now. You and me got some working out to do.
Yes, sir!
Charlie looked at Matt and Sam, taking in the stone necklaces both wore.
You boys would be Bodine and Two Wolves. Me and some other old boys was jawing about you two not long ago.
The men shook hands, and Pete moved them all to a bigger table. Dale and Chrisman left the saloon.
Now, what do you make of those two, Mr. Harris?
Darned if I know, boys. Some strange goings on in this town.
How come them two wanted me gone from here so sudden? I took a bath in a creek just this morning. I know it ain't that.
I don't know the answer to that neither, Charlie. But it's good to see you again. Man, I didn't recognize you when you first walked in.
Well, I reckon the years ain't been real kind to me. Lord knows I never wanted to name a gunfighter, but it got hung on me anyways. Takes a toll on a man.
Charlie looked at Matt and Sam.
You boys ought to head back to Wyoming and hang them guns up right now while you still got a chance. Another 2-3 more years and you ain't gonna never shake loose from them. Look at me, boys. I'm 59, I think. But I'm still dragging iron, always looking over my shoulder.
No more, Charlie. No more. You can either take the deputy's job or go to work for me. I just signed papers with the government for a lot more acres. I need someone to run it.
I'm obliged, Pete. I'll take either job. But from the way you people talk, seems to me like I'd be best suited toting a star for now.
Jimmy came back in and laid LeBar's rig on the table. He had wiped it free of blood.
Whew. That's sure some fancy rig.
It ain't the rig that matters so much as the man carrying it. If you're gonna tote a badge, and believe me, I know all about that, there's some things you got to learn. I'll teach you. Maybe I can teach you enough to keep you alive.
Sheriff Jack Linwood rode in late that afternoon and was clearly stunned when he learned that the grizzled, gray-haired man who had killed LeBar was the legendary Charlie Starr, and very pleased that the gun handler would consent to wear a badge. He swore him in formally and gave him a badge. Linwood had spoken with Coop about the ambush, but he had lost the hours-old trail of the unknown ambusher.
Jimmy, tomorrow you ride out to the Reed farm and speak to the father and his boys. They've all got Springfield rifles. Be polite but firm with them. Ask to see their rifles and tell them why you're doing it. If any of them get nervous about it, well, just act like nothing has happened and come on back and tell me. But I don't think they had anything to do with it. Still in all, we've got to check it out. Charlie, you ride out to the Circle V and I'll ride out to the Lightning Spread and nose around. It's not going to do us any good. But by God, they'll know we're not going to back up from them. Both of you boys ride easy. That sniper is on somebody's payroll. Place is getting weirder and weirder.
Matt and Sam had an early supper at Juan's and hit their blankets early. Sam was asleep within minutes, but sleep came hard for Matt. Something was nagging at his brain, and he could not pin it down. It darted and ducked and hid in the shadows. and it was the answer to the strange behavior of Dale, Chrisman, and the two holdout ranchers. But it remained a mystery as sleep finally took him.
Huh?
Bodine's eyes popped open and every sense was working overtime. He had no way of knowing what time it was, but he figured it was very late, after midnight. What had pulled him out of a deep sleep? He didn't know, but he sensed danger. Bodine eased from his blankets and reached for his guns. Sam slept on. Bodine stood in the center of the room, a pistol in each hand. Bodine turned to face the west window, the top half of the window boarded up. A shadow fell. A movement followed silently. Matt caught the glint of light off a gun barrel and moved away from the center of the room. He watched as the unknown gunman lifted the weapon. It was a double-barreled, sawed-off shotgun. The gunman pointed the twin muzzles toward the sleeping Sam. Matt lifted his guns, cocking them, and fired, the slug striking the assassin in the face and throwing him back. His dying hand twitched and fired the shotgun harmlessly into the night sky. Sam was rolling out of bed, grabbing for his guns.
Stay down and keep your eyes on the back. I'm going out the front.
Jack, Jimmy, and Charlie were out of their beds and running down the street toward the sounds of shooting, all only partly dressed, but all with their hats on and each hand gripping a six-shooter.
Be careful.
Did you get him?
I got him, but I doubt he came alone.
I'll swing around back. Cover that area.
A slug tore into a support post about 2 inches from Matt's head. Matt fired at the same time Sam cut loose.
Coming up behind you, Matt!
He hurried to Matt in a doubled-over run and squatted down beside him.
Charlie, you in position?
Back of the house is clear.
I'm coming out, using the back door.
It's clear over here!
Jimmy had worked his way to the vacant meadow on the west side of the shack.
Get some lamps.
Lamplight shone on the faces of the dead men. The twin 44s had made an unpleasant mess out of the face of the shotgun toter, the slugs taking him under one eye and in the center of his forehead.
I never saw either one of these men in my life. Jimmy, you were born around here, you know?
No, sir. Never saw him before tonight.
Mayor Dale ran up from his place over the bank.
What the Sam Hill's going on?
You know these men, Mayor?
Jack pointed to the dead assassins. Dale peered at them.
Never saw him before in my life. You know him?
Let's find their horses. Maybe they got something in their saddlebags.
Bodine and Two Wolves got dressed and went over to the sheriff's office to go through the contents of the dead men's saddlebags. It was already 4 o'clock in the morning, so more sleep was out of the question. The contents of the saddlebags at first offered no further clues. They each contained a box of shells, a change of clothing, a few dollars in coin and greenbacks, a spare six-gun, and the usual odds and ends a cowboy or a drifter might carry. A length of rawhide, some blank sheets of folded paper and a stub of a pencil, a tintype of a gray-haired lady, spare socks.
Damn it!
It was Jimmy who found the first clue toward unraveling the mystery. He pointed to a slit along the inside lip of the saddlebags.
Look here.
Sam pulled out a small piece of folded paper.
Meet R&D at... Can't read that word, it's smudged. For payoff and inst.
R&D. Rainer and Dale?
Could be. But I bet there's 2 dozen people within walking distance whose names begin with R&D.
Let's say it is Dale. Why would he want to kill you boys?
No reason.
He welcomed us back to the hotel. Wanted us to deposit some money in his bank. And apparently wants peace in this region. Dale being involved doesn't make sense.
INST must mean instructions. So maybe that means the killing wasn't going to stop with you two.
That's right. No Springfield rifle was in either saddle boot. So this R&D is probably paying the sniper. So I got this to think about. I wonder who's next on the list.
The would-be assassins were buried within hours in unmarked graves on the edge of the town cemetery, while the sheriff and his deputies rode out into the county to question people. Matt and Sam decided to do some prowling on their own.
Let's find the Rayleigh gang.
What do we do with them if we find them?
I bet we can think of something.
They took provisions for 3 days, heading straight for Lightning Range. 2 miles out of town, they stopped and watched a slow-moving wagon come toward them. It was driven by a boy of no more than 10 or 11 years old, with a bloody bandage around his head. The brothers rode up to the wagon. The boy, with dried tear streaks having lined grooves on his sooty face, looked up at them.
Big, brave cowboys! Well, I ain't got no gun, so you can shoot me like you done them back there last night and then go somewheres and brag about it.
What do you mean, son? What about those in the back?
Mama, my pa, and my sis. Box H riders hit us last night. Burned us out and left me for dead. But I fooled them. I put my family in this wagon before dawn this morning.
Matt rode up to the bed of the wagon for a look before it dawned on him what the boy had said. Box H riders. It couldn't be. He looked at the bullet-riddled bodies in the bed and gritted his teeth. This was needless and brutal and vicious. The man and woman and girl had been shot to rags. Each one had to have been shot 20 times or more.
How do you know they were Pete Harris's hands?
Seen the brand?
Son, we're awfully sorry about your family. I'm Sam Two Wolves, and this is my brother, Matt Bodine. We had nothing to do with this, and I'll bet you that Pete Harris didn't either.
The boy's eyes had gone blank. The lad suddenly dropped his reins, fell over backward, and landed on his father's dead body. Matt stepped from his horse and gingerly climbed into the bed of the wagon, trying not to step on any bodies. He quickly checked the boy.
He's alive. His eyes are open, but he doesn't seem to be seeing anything.
He's probably in shock. Is his skin sort of clammy to the touch?
Yes, and his breathing is all wrong.
Wrap him up in a blanket and hand him to me. I'll head fast for town and you bring the wagon, okay?
Matt wrapped the boy. He appeared so thin as to be malnourished in his own blanket and handed him over to Sam.
See you in town, brother. Sam, have someone head out and find Linwood. Get him back to town as quick as possible.
For a fact, this could blow the lid off this thing.
Sam left at a gallop, holding the boy tightly against him. Matt tied the reins of his horse to the rear of the wagon and climbed onto the seat. He picked up the reins.
Come on, team. I don't like this any better than you do.
A crowd met Matt in town, and most were appalled at the sight of the bodies. Matt saw a few smirks among the crowd, glad to be rid of a Nestor family, but not many. He memorized those few faces. He handed the reins to Simmons, and the store owner shook his head in sorrow.
Terrible. What's wrong with people? Why can't we all live in peace?
But Matt had no answer to that. He led his horse over to the doctor's office and stepped inside. The doctor was in his outer office, talking with Sam.
How's the boy?
As stable as I can make him. We don't know much about shock yet. He will not respond to salts, and I've elevated his legs and have him warm. That's about all that modern medicine can do at this point.
Do people die from it?
Oh, yes. Not often, but it happens. We just don't know how many types of shock there are. The boy has experienced a terrible mental blow. He might come out of it not remembering a thing. The mind, the brain. Well, there again, we don't know much about that either. The pastor's wife is in there with him. Perhaps God will take over where medicine fails.
I know what's going to take over out yonder on the range.
What?
44s and 45s.